Hello, my name is Liz, and I was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, almost a year ago now. And since meeting other people with MS in and around York, I think the one thing, or the two things mainly, that I've noticed are, firstly, how strange the disease is in terms of how it affects different people. So no two people with MS will have exactly the same symptoms. Everybody's symptoms will be different and peculiar to them. And then secondly, I think what I have noticed is how much of an impact it can have on one particular person. So how much, for example, they might have to change their life and their lifestyle, whereas for somebody else it might only have a very minimal impact. So for example, I feel very lucky that actually at the minute, so far, I haven't had to make any major changes to my lifestyle, but other people might have to give up work, for example, because the condition won't allow them to be able to continue with maybe the job that they had. So they might have to change the profession or not work. Because of these observations, basically I wanted to find out a little bit more about the disease and why it has such different impacts on everybody who has MS. So I've come along today to York Hospital to speak to Julie, who's one of our specialist MS nurses, who everybody thinks is fab in the York area.
That's an idea, thank you.
Hello, Julie. Yeah, we do, honestly. Everybody says that you're fab. So I just wondered if you could just please start off by explaining a little bit about what MS actually is.
Yep, no, that's fine. Hi. So MS is what we call is an autoimmune condition. So auto means you, and you means your immune system.
Yep.
And we know that your immune system is there to fight infections, and there's lots of cells and things involved with that. What happens in MS, it's what we call a case of like mistaken identity, where your immune system, which fights infections, thinks there's something wrong with the myelin. And the myelin is what coats your nerve fibres. So you have lots of these nerve pathways within your brain and your spine, and we call that your central nervous system, your brain and your spine. And that's where MS, these mistaken identities, targeting. Your immune system gets this mistaken message, and it goes into your brain, into your spine, and it starts to attack the myelin. The myelin's like it protects the nerve fibre. It's like an insulation. So if you imagine you've got like a wire, and you imagine you've got like a light and a plug, you need the electricity from the plug to make the light work, and there's that wire running in between, and that wire is coated. If I stripped the wire down, your electricity is not going to run through the wire to make the light work. And that's what's happening in MS. The wire's been stripped because it's been attacked. So the nerve pathway that controls, the messages won't get through, and then patients will then develop symptoms.
So basically, does your body think that the myelin is something which is foreign or something bad
that's
within
right.
your body that needs to be removed?
Yeah,
but it's not.
There's nothing wrong with the myelin. Your immune system, these cells, think there is something wrong with it. And the job of them is to attack it. So they go in and think, right, there's something wrong with the myelin. We need to destroy it. We need to attack it because there's an infection. There's something wrong there. When actually there was nothing wrong with that nerve pathway. So it's like we say that case of mistaken identity. These cells think there's something wrong, yet there isn't anything wrong. So then patients then will then have symptoms, and often the first symptom can be optic neuritis, which is quite a classic first sign of MS.
Been there,
yeah. And often people Google optic neuritis and the first thing that comes up is MS. And often patients, after having that, may then develop other symptoms or have another relapse of their MS. So it's the most common condition in young people, which a lot of people don't realize as well. Most people diagnosed, and most people I see from diagnosis, are between like the ages of 20, 30, maybe up to 40. So, and often it's more common in women as well.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and that over my sort of period of working in MS has changed. When I first started this job, you know, many years ago, for every one man, it was two women. Now for every one man, it's three women. So
really?
It's actually going up. So there's a lot looking at why is that? Why, you know, because we still don't know why people do get MS. You know, there is lots of different things where, you know, if you look at a map of the world, you have the equator running through the middle, the further away from the equator, the higher the incidence of MS. The closer you get to the equator, unheard of practically of MS. So we think that's to do with sunshine and vitamin D. So cases are higher in Scotland than England. And again, the weather is not as good as our weather, even though our weather's pretty rubbish still here as well. But so there's lots to do with the links of vitamin D, even though it's not the cause, but it's a reasoning as to why. So being a woman, where you live in the country, all these are sort of things that could increase your chance of developing MS. But it is nothing the person has done, because lots of people will come to me and say, have I done something that's caused this. I had a car accident when I was 18. Did I trigger anything? And the answer's no, you didn't. This is just one of them things that can happen. Enough. Yeah, that can happen. But that basically is, it's that damage to the myelin sheath that causes disruption to messages within the brain and the spine that produces symptoms, and that you know would cause you to come into hospital because something is tingling or a bit numb or you can't, it's a bit weak and it feels a bit odd. And then they would then maybe go to the doctors or come to A&E or then have a scan and then go on then to see a neurologist.
Right. Okay, so being newly diagnosed or fairly newly diagnosed, is there anything that you could advise in terms of changes to my lifestyle that I could
Yeah, that's really good. And there's, because lots, that's often a question when people come into clinic and we talk about diagnosis and we talk about what MS is, what support there is there, and what people want to do and go away is, well, can I do something? What can I do now to try and improve or try and manage things a little bit better? Is there any sort of changes or lifestyle changes? And often we talk, we're on newly diagnosed groups and we talk quite a lot about that. But there is little things that you can do will, you know, will make a difference in the long term. And one of them is around, a lot of it's around diet, lifestyle and exercise, and we do talk quite a bit when people are first diagnosed about that. And I was reading, you know, your brain needs up to sort of 300 kilocalories a day, so you, diet plays an important part, and it's good that you eat a healthy diet and that you're eating regularly as well, because that will help fatigue, which is quite a big symptom of MS as well, and that will help with management of that. So diet is a sometimes a bit of a funny area as well, because a lot of people will come in with a lot of diets they've seen on the internet. There's lots of different diets out there, but research in MS and diet is quite small, so often there's trials but not many people in the trials for us to say yes, you must make that change, because there were so, you know, because the groups are quite small, that there might have been some difference, but then bigger numbers are not big enough. But what I would say is, you know, we're always preached about your five a day, your fruit and your vegetable. We know eating fish and increasing that in your diet can be quite helpful in MS as well. Fish is supposed to be what they call brain food, so they're supposed to help with the myelin, yeah, as well. So with the myelin repair, so in, you know, Mediterranean diet has also been spoken about as well, about increasing that. But I think, you know, I've got patients though who are, who've changed and gone maybe more plant-based diet as well, and they've actually found that's helped as well a little bit. So they feel they're less fatigued because they've cut a bit of dairy out. And they've cut a bit of meat out and they've become more vegetarian and plant. And they've actually said, I mean, it's good to have all bits, isn't it, of all
like a
different
mixed, balanced diet.
But they've come to me and said, it's not going to change MS. So when people change their diet, it's not going to change MS. MS is there. It's a long-term condition. It's not going away. It might go into remission, depending on what type of MS you have, but it will never make it go away. But it might help, changing the diet and looking at exercise will help more manage
your
day-to-day symptoms. Yeah. Right. So it might improve the symptoms. So I get different, you know, from different people of what different people have said from their experience. So yeah, so it, you know, I'm always learning all the time. Obviously, there's things we learn from books and what I read and research and that, but patients will come to me and tell me they've done that, and that's really good, valuable for me to take, to pass on to other patients as well, because I'm learning from patients all the time. You know, you are the expert. I'm an expert in giving you the advice, but you're an expert in MS, the patient. And if that works for you and comes back, then it's, you know, and I think, oh, that's quite interesting. Mm. But that might not work for somebody else. But it's quite interesting for me to know, to say, I might look at that or pass that information on to other patients. And I think the other thing really is, I sort of what I really wanted to talk about was like brain health as well. And what I do talk about is these things when patients are diagnosed, of things that they can do to try and keep your brain as healthy as possible. And one of them is activity. And so higher levels of aerobic fitness are associated with preserving your brain tissue volume, and volume is that shrinkage of your brain. And everybody's brain shrinks as we get older. That's part of the aging process as well. But often patients with MS, their brains sometimes shrink a little bit quicker because of the lesions and the damage. So it's trying to preserve their brain health as much as possible, looking forward to the future. And by doing that, is exercise is really good. And
so I was gonna say,
yeah, go up.
The fact that I've now started doing a lot more gym work that should benefit me in the long term.
It should benefit, yeah. We all should be doing help. That, yeah. Because these are things that I'm going to, you know, like exercise, diet, is general things that for the population we all should be doing. This will all preserve our brain health. But with people with MS and lesions, we really need to be making more proactive at making these changes now to help them in the long term. So joining the gym, you know, is amazing. We know that if you do that and join the gym, that sort of slows down accumulation of progression going in the future. Yeah. So, you know, if you move your joints more, then you're going to have less problems in the future. If you're looking at that now, you're going to have less problems if you become less mobile, say, in the future. But if you've been doing exercise and stretching prior to, you know, like I say, for all of us, for the aging process, this will help us with osteoarthritis, you know, for women, menopause, as we get older anyway. But actually, it's really important for people with MS as well.
So say, like, if you do a lot of running and say you've got quite strong muscles in your legs, say if you were to have a relapse in that area which affected your legs, would that then benefit your recovery, do you think?
Yeah, it varies, because the effects of relapses are different on different people. But I think, you know, if people are quite mobile or quite sort of, fit, yeah. So if people are quite fit and they're probably going to recover a bit quicker than somebody who isn't. So if they're quite sort of do a lot of stretching, a lot of exercises and fitness, they're probably going to find they'll recover that little bit, maybe slightly quicker. And you've seen that people who are slightly, their outlook's different to other people. You can see different ways of people, but then they might not. They might be super fit and have this relapse that might really affect them. And it might still be a slow progress, or it might be a quick, it does vary. But you know, by doing exercise, thing is, it's not all just gym. I think people think exercise, I've got to go to the gym. You don't have to go to the gym at all. Gym is great if you can go to the gym and do that, but it's walking, it's jogging, swimming,
yeah,
it's cycling, yoga, Pilates.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be a cardio exercise to do. Walking's great. Walking, we know, is really good exercise for us all to be doing. But by doing things like that, you're going to reduce pain, you're going to help with stiffness, and that's going to help then, like I say, further. What I would say is, during a relapse, is not to exercise, because that can exacerbate things and it could just make recovery a little bit slower.
Yeah, right.
So it's recover from your relapse and then slowly build up your exercise. But I think people as well need to look at the type of exercise, but not set themselves really high targets either. Don't think, oh, I need to run 30 minutes. Just start really slowly. Just first of all, it's find something you enjoy doing, and then set yourself small targets and build that up slowly, and think, okay, I'm going to just do 5 minutes walking on the treadmill, but next time I might build it up to 12 minutes or 10 minutes and just build that. But don't set yourself over 30 minutes and then
especially if you're not used to exercise.
Exactly. And then I think, you know, you can, some symptoms might happen, so with that increased heat that you can get during exercises, that can trigger off some sort of symptoms. So sometimes people can get their sensory symptoms of like pins and needles or numbness suddenly peak a little bit, and then they start to panic, and you're not doing any damage or anything like that, but that's just your body telling you, right, that's it now. You need to just try and slow down a little bit, or just rest a little bit and then come back to it again. So it's about knowing your limitations, but it's not like going and pushing yourself right through the limits, because you're just going to then be tired for the next couple of days, and then you're going to then miss out on your session, and then you're going to get cross with yourself. And then, so it's about just doing smaller bits. It's about finding what's the right exercise for you. And, you know, nurses, MS nurses can help with that. Physios can help with that. And then physios can help you looking at putting an exercise program together, can help you look at looking at gyms. I mean, we're quite fortunate in our area that we have a thing called Healthwise, where you can be prescribed gym sessions, which are at a reduced cost as well, and can go there and have quite a set program that they can tailor for you, and then you can go off then and carry that on yourself. So I think it's about not thinking it all has to be gym. It can be just walking. It can be, there's so many online things as well, you know, the MS Trust, the MS Society, there are so many things that they do online. So you don't have to be at a gym. You can actually be at home and do your own exercise at home, and that's great as well, that if you can do that.
Yeah, just getting out and being active.
Being active. Just, you know, if you can't get out and be active, then there's, you know, like I say, look at some online things, do some stretchings, you know, do stretches even. You know, look at Pilates, there's so many Pilates, so many, you know, YouTube things, isn't there? There's a mountain of things you can look at.
The MS Society with Tony, they've got weekly
Zoom
sessions.
For people who can't get out. And obviously, through COVID, that was brilliant, because people become deconditioned, didn't they, through that, and it's trying to sort of get through that as well. So it's about, you know, I don't want people to start things and then not achieve it and then give up as well everybody does with exercise, don't they? If you think, well, I'm not getting any benefit from it, so they stop. Nothing's going to change. It's a long-term thing. And this is, you know, you've just got to build it slowly and just keep it going. Because, and I can't say Pilates enough. Pilates is amazing.
Really?
Yeah, Pilates is amazing for MS. So if you can do lots of stretching, because it's about moving their muscles and not getting that stiffness and tightness there in the long term. If you can start moving your joints and stretches now, that in the long term will be really beneficial for people with MS. So yeah, finding the right exercise, setting yourself a target. And I think people think it's weird, but actually exercise, and that's all, also help fatigue. Even though people think, well, it's going to make me fatigue worse, it's going to be more tired, it doesn't. But don't give up, because in the long term you will notice a difference with your fatigue.
Because fatigue's a big symptom of
MS. Yeah, fatigue's a big symptom of MS, and that's a whole little subject for another chat. That's for another
time.
That's a whole big...
We will be chatting
thing, and we will,
that.
Yeah, that is a... There's a lot to talk about around fatigue management.
Yeah, and we've also got a session as well with some people from the MS Society who...
Yeah, talk about their own...
Explain what their fatigue own personal, is like for them, how it affects them.
So we can talk about the education side and then, the personal side. I think another thing as well about from that, these lifestyle choices that, I wanted to sort of say, as well as being active as much as you can, it's about keeping your mind active. So doing things like little hobbies and crosswords and pastimes, try and find something that you enjoy doing, that will help the cognitive problems with MS in the future as well. It's like they say, if you don't use it, you lose it, but it is about keeping them neurons firing, and doing little things like that actually in the long term will be helpful as well. Smoking, we know smoking's not good for you. We know that anyway. But there is now research that has shown that cigarette smoking is associated with decreased brain volume, as well as higher relapse rates. And also it increases disability progression in the future as well. So stopping smoking is a really positive thing. If patients can do that, look at their lifestyle by doing that. And then we can support patients with that. If they're struggling, where do I start from, stopping smoking? There's so much anyway, because there's such a drive to generally for our health, isn't there? For diabetes, heart disease, everything, is if you can cut smoking. But actually research now shows that actually it increases problems in MS as well. We support patients with programmes that are trying to do that, watching how much you drink, alcohol again. These are things that all of us as a general public should be looking at. But, if patients with MS can make these simple changes now, in the long term, that will be beneficial. And another thing as well is about weight control, healthy exercise and diet, and also can help with that. And there's lots of programmes that we can support patients if they're wanting to lose weight with that, as there is in the NHS as well. But we now know that sort of obesity is associated with higher number of MS lesions as well.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So maintaining a healthy weight is also important. So all these are things that are simple things, are just lifestyle changes, but actually seem like common sense things, but actually do make a difference in the long term if people can start implementing that now, trying to make these changes in the long
while
term. They will see it.
They'll
see that in the long term.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very helpful as ever. So we'll be chatting about a few other areas of MS later on.
Great.
But for now, thank you very much for your
You're
help
welcome.
And look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Me too. See you soon.